Okay, Harry Potter fans, welcome back to Chatty Potter. Please excuse the tone of my voice. I do have what I think is a cold. I hope is a cold. It might be COVID. We're waiting for the test results. But luckily, I did not have this cold when I recorded the episode. It's just here for the intro. So give me another couple of seconds and you won't have to put up with this bunged up tone anymore. Today, I'm going to be talking to my friend Holly. We're going to be discussing unpopular opinions in the Harry Potter universe. These unpopular opinions were provided by you guys on my Instagram, where I asked you for your unpopular opinions. So if you want to follow me on Instagram at brett.thoughts, you can provide some unpopular opinions and maybe some other input for future episodes. You can also support the podcast on Patreon. That's patreon.com/chattypotter for as little as £5 a month. Without anything else to try and splutter my way through, please enjoy the episode. Holly, welcome back. Thank you for joining us on Chatty Potter again. Do you want to start by talking about who you are and what you do on the internet?
Hello, Brett. Thank you for having me back. I'm glad to be back on Chatty Potter. The first time was super, super fun. Yeah, I am a full-time content creator, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, etc. And I'm a singer-songwriter actually in Nashville, Tennessee. And that's why I started my, path as a content creator. And then somewhere along the way during the pandemic, I completely fell in love with the world of content creation. And now it's what I do full-time. And Brett and I met on Harry Potter TikTok, and I'm just super glad that we did.
Me too. And right now, like, for anyone who's listening to just the audio version of this, like, fully repping Hufflepuff right now, which I guess is your house then.
Yes, absolutely. And you with the Slytherin as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We've got to like butt heads, I think, especially because it's fitting with today's topic, which is going to be unpopular opinions. And I feel like we might have some debates on them.
Oh, we definitely have to have some debates on Slytherin versus Hufflepuff, because I feel like people either think Hufflepuff and Slytherin are like the most opposite, or they acknowledge like the beneficial friendships that come with Hufflepuff and Slytherin.
I feel like it's a commonly held thing that I feel like the way around that it's phrased suggests that Hufflepuffs are like pets, but like every Slytherin has a designated Hufflepuff is how I hear people talk about it. Yes. It's never the other way around.
No, never the other way around.
But that's so funny. I feel like if hybrid houses were a thing, like I had a bunch of illustrations put together for like hybrid house crests. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'd be a Slytherpuff. Like, I have a t-shirt with a Slytherpuff crest on it. So like, I like Hufflepuff. I will make fun of them, but I like them as a house.
The good thing is we just laugh along with you, you know, like even when we're being laughed at, we just say, oh, they're laughing with us.
100%. I feel like that's why you're the most mocked house, not because people like you less, but because you're the one that will take it. Okay.
Absolutely. We're just like, oh, perfect. Want a cookie? Like, you know. Yeah. And I think I would be a Puffleclaw? That's not right.
Ravenpuff?
Hufflepuff. That's it.
Hufflepuff? Yeah.
Hufflepuff. Yeah, because, you know, Hufflepuff first. You're in the main house first, you know, in second house. Yeah, I think I would be a Hufflepuff.
Oh, I like that. So do you think it would be quite close if you were at Hogwarts, like between Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw?
I'm not going to lie. I really wanted to be a Ravenclaw. And so I think I took the Pottermore test like 2 or 3 times trying to get in Ravenclaw. But I wasn't going to like lie with my answer. So what I did was I answered the most honestly first. And then I gave like my second most, you know, honest answer second. And every dang time I was in Hufflepuff and I was like, no. And now being Hufflepuff is like kind of my entire identity. I say as I lift up my mug to take a sip of water that is also a Hufflepuff mug and my Hufflepuff banner in the background if you're watching, you know, or sorry, listening on the podcast and can't see. Yeah, it's basically my whole identity. So I've joked about taking the test again, and my boyfriend was like, you can't take the test again. If you're not a Hufflepuff, it will destroy you.
Yeah, and because I feel like if I were to take the Pottermore test now, I am kind of worried that my Hufflepuff has outgrown my Slytherin. Like, but you get sorted at 11 at Hogwarts, mm-hmm. and that's it. Like, you don't get do-overs, so I'm not going to put myself in that position, and that is my defense for it.
Do you agree with Dumbledore whenever he says to Snape, sometimes I think we sort too early?
100%, yeah, absolutely. Like, you cannot define a person at 11. Like, there is too much development to occur before they become adults between the age of 11 and them turning into the person they're going to be for the rest of their life.
Agreed.
If that's even a thing, do you think you can be a kind of person for the rest of your life? I feel like there's always growth and development, right?
There's always growth. But I mean, I think the main argument for sorting early, for me at least, would be that it's supposed to be what you value, not necessarily who you are. So like for Hufflepuff, like I value like friendship and trust and like honesty and, you know, dedication, things like that. Those are things that I value. You know, maybe I wasn't always like X, Y, or Z as a person, but since I value those traits so much, I think maybe you almost even become more of who you are in your house, which could be an argument for starting early.
Yeah, I like that. And also, like, I think McGonagall says it at the beginning of The Philosopher's Stone, like, your house is your family, because it's a boarding school. Mm-hmm. Like, you need that tight-knit group of people that you can see as, like, your family away from family sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, I get it. Yeah. I don't agree with it necessarily wholeheartedly, but I get it.
I have a question, actually, since, you know, I'm in the US and you're in the UK. I saw a TikTok that was talking about how house points are a thing in a lot of schools in the UK, that that's not just, like, a Harry Potter thing, but that's, like, a thing in UK school systems.
Yeah, not all. Like, so my school introduced houses, my primary school introduced houses not long after I left. And it was nothing as magical as like Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, Gryffindor, Slytherin. It was like people from history from this area of the country, like it was named who they were named after. So it was like Raleigh and Drake and stuff. So it's a thing. It was more a thing, I think. It was more of a thing in very... So it was like a collegiate thing. So like, I don't know how much you know about like universities like Oxford and stuff, but they're universities that are made up of lots of different colleges, and the colleges had different like names and stuff. And I think it was that element being applied to then like the wider schooling system.
Okay.
So yeah, it's fairly common. It's not like Harry Potter made up that concept, but it's not in every single school.
I think definitely like a lot of people in the US, like, just growing up reading these books, thought that, like, you know, the Harry Potter series invented the idea of like the house points and house cups and like things like that. At least I did. I mean, maybe I'm the only one, but when I looked at the comment section of that TikTok video, people were like, what? This
That's
wasn't
so
just Harry
funny.
Potter.
Oh my, do you guys have like prefects and head boys and stuff?
No, I mean, I went to public school, so not in public school. Did you guys?
Yeah, we had, like, I was a prefect at school.
What?
I know. I'm like Percy Weasley. I was a prefect.
Oh, my gosh.
Funny story, actually. So we had prefects in primary school up to the age of 11, and then prefects in secondary school as well, so from 11 to 16. And I wasn't a prefect in secondary school. Was I? No, I was. Oh, no, I was a prefect in secondary school as well. But when I was a prefect in primary school, I was really worried it wasn't cool. So I had a meeting with my teacher about 2 months into being a prefect and tried to give my prefect badge back, so I could fit in with the cool people. And Mrs. Hopkins, my year six teacher, told me it was a very serious decision to make and I should go home and talk about it with my family. And I was too nervous to tell my father that I didn't want to be a prefect anymore. So I just kept being it, even though I wanted to fit in with my friends who weren't prefects.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah, no, we don't have that. I'm trying to think of what an equivalent would be. Like in high school, we have like class president, vice president, treasurer, things like that. And I was like vice president for every year until senior year because I didn't want to be in charge of planning the reunion. So I didn't run. And then we always had like student council. I don't know if that's anything similar, where we had like a group of students that would like meet once a week at school and debate like or talk about like school issues and topics.
Yeah,
and
we
stuff.
Had that too. We had school counselors. We didn't have like presidents and stuff. I've seen a lot of that in like movies and TV shows from the States, like people running for class president and stuff. Yeah. I would assume they don't actually have that much power, but the TV shows and movies make it sound like it's such a big deal as though they do.
It wasn't in my case, but I mean, I can't speak for, you know. For all of them. Sorry, this is very off topic, but I find it very interesting to know.
No,
you
it
were
is
a prefect.
Interesting. Absolutely. Like, yeah, I was a prefect. I had a like a maroon badge. Actually,
you had the badge. Oh my
I had
gosh.
A badge. Yeah.
Did Fred and George, you know, make it say Pinhead?
They did. Yeah, they made fun of me. No, unfortunately, wasn't quite like Percy as a prefect. But no, it was. It's so funny that you'd like the people from the States, and I guess just other countries in general, not just the US. Probably think Harry Potter invented, or J.K. Rowling invented those for Harry Potter.
Yeah, I'd never
Very
heard
commonplace.
Of the word prefect.
You haven't even heard the word?
Mm-mm. Not when I was first reading it, when I was, you know, in elementary school in the U.S. Like, I'd never heard those words.
Oh my god, that
or
is
that word,
baffling
I should say.
To me.
Yeah, but once again, public school system in the Midwest, like, I can't speak for all the schools in the U.S. There's definitely a chance that it's a thing somewhere.
See, I'm not sure, because I've heard it before, that, like, prefects... people in the States just don't know it, like not specifically just people in public school in the Midwest. Like, so interesting. That's so funny. Gosh, I bet there are, I bet like there are other things as well that just wouldn't occur to us. Like, I wouldn't know what you had and hadn't heard of, but I bet there are loads of other things.
So many things, I'm
sure. Maybe we'll have to do another podcast about it.
That sounds good to me.
But for now, today's podcast is going to be about unpopular Harry Potter opinions, which we did in the last run of episodes with a couple of other guests. And I'm very excited to talk to you about these because I have had an insight into some of your opinions. You know, we'll start with what I think is going to be the most controversial one. We'll hook the viewers. I think you know the opinion I'm talking about. Do you want to lead on it?
Yes. I believe that my most unpopular Harry Potter opinion is that I am so glad that Harry named his child Albus Severus Potter. I think that was a great choice.
It makes me throw up a little bit in my mouth every time you say it.
I know. Okay. Shall I argue my point?
Please, yes. 2 minutes on the clock.
Perfect.
I'm joking. Take as long as you need.
I don't think it's a good name. I will say that. I don't think, oh, this is a great name. This is a good name. You know, it's a pretty name.
Not
anything.
Planning to, like, if you had kids, you wouldn't name them Albus Severus.
No.
Okay.
I think it was a great name choice because I think it is so telling of who Harry is, like, as a character. So we'll start with Severus first. Harry went his whole time at Hogwarts thinking that Snape was evil. And we'll use the word evil purposefully because, you know, whether Snape was a good or bad person, like we all know he was a bully. Let's just say good or evil. Overall, you know, he was on the side of good. So Harry went the past 7 years, you know, demonizing Snape and fighting against him and never realizing that Snape was on his side all along. And then Snape dies in his arms before Harry can have that like moment of closure with Snape. And I think that that would be something that would stick with him for life. So I think him naming his kid Severus is partially like almost an apology, like kind of like a, I can never take this back. I can never make this right. So here is something that will immortalize the fact that I am so sorry that we never got this closure. Albus.
Just before you move on to Albus, do you, just trying to get a bit more context around your thoughts there, do you think Snape is, do you like Snape? Like, not as a character, I think Snape is a wonderful character, well-written, very flawed, but would you consider yourself to like Snape as a person?
See, it's so difficult because, you know, I read the books when I was a kid, and then I grew up just watching the movies over and over and over again, and I love Alan Rickman. Like, I love Alan Rickman. I mean, I have a massive poster of Alan Rickman as Snape. Like, I love Alan Rickman as Snape. I love the portrayal. And in the movies, I would say, like, yes, I think Snape is, you know, as good of a person as he can be for all of the flaws. But in the books, I think he's a terrible person who does good, if that makes any sense. Like, canonically, in the books, I think he is not a good person. I think he is a bad, flawed person who does good things, who is still fighting for good overall, but just does it in so many messed up ways. I don't think I could argue for the fact that he is a good person.
I think if we had Snape's character just without any of his teaching scenes, so you didn't see how he tormented children, you could almost... I mean, there's still the fact that he voluntarily joined the Death Eaters.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to make a case that he's not a bad person. But you're right, he does do good things and ultimately sacrifices himself and gives his life for the cause, right?
Yeah. And I think he is someone who, just from such a young age, we know he had an abusive father and it was in just a terrible home life situation. And, you know, then has the first positive influence in his life, Lily, who's kind of taken away from him by his then tormentor bully at school. You know, it's just, I don't think he's a good person. I think he is someone who is very flawed and has so many struggles, who desperately wants to do good, you know, by the end of his life, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's good to know. So, totally understand your reasoning. Like, Harry's apology, almost his closest thing to closure, is naming Severus. What about Albus?
Whew, Albus. So we can probably go into a whole other debate about if Dumbledore is a good person or not. But I think that Harry naming his son Albus shows like what a strong hold Dumbledore always had on Harry. Mm-hmm. I think that it's so telling of the fact that, you know, I mean, Harry was Dumbledore's main man, you know, like no matter what Dumbledore did, even the fact that he literally raised him for slaughter, as I believe Snape said.
Yep.
Harry was always going to defend Dumbledore. He was always going to idolize him and immortalize him, and just, he was his hero. And even if we can see from the outside that it was an extremely toxic situation for the most part, whether you think it was for the greater good or not, it was still toxic for this literal child to be put through this.
100%.
But Harry naming his kid Albus Severus just shows that he never saw that. He never saw that side of the coin. I think to him, Dumbledore will always be a hero, and I think that's problematic.
Yeah, so that's interesting. It's an argument I've never heard for the names. It's not that you like the names, it's that mm-hmm. you think it's in character. It's a very yes. fitting character choice for Harry to name
Absolutely.
His kid Albus Severus. And you make the argument so well. It is hard to argue.
It
just
is hard.
Merge the words.
Correct.
It is hard. Yeah. It's tough to argue against you. I think you're right about Dumbledore having such a hold on not only Harry, but I think the wizarding world. And yeah. I think that's an extension of just the fact that J.K. Rowling probably thought she'd written this flawless, wonderful hero. Yeah. Like, and I know it touches upon his flaws through the life of and lies of Albus Dumbledore, but it doesn't touch on how manipulative he was.
No.
And I think, I almost feel like we as readers who read it really young were also manipulated into seeing Dumbledore as this like flawless, wonderful, like beacon of light character.
I
when in fact
Dumbledore.
He wasn't.
Yeah.
Same. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, it fits. It's just a horrible name, Holly.
I can't argue that.
I feel like I can't argue with your points. Like it could be a reasonable decision that Harry is like, okay, closure. You know, Snape was still Lily's best friend for the longest time, mm-hmm. even though, you know, he was sort of directly responsible for her death by telling Voldemort about the prophecy, but we'll slide on past that bit. I can see your point. But why doesn't Ginny get a say?
I have a theory that this goes into the complex of, you know, he was her celebrity crush. Mm-hmm. Like, she idolized Harry almost the way that, like, Harry idolized Dumbledore, you know? Like, to
That's
the
true.
Idea that, like, Harry was the person to Jenny that could, like, do no wrong. And mm-hmm. I think they do end up with, like, a healthy relationship and everything in the end, potentially. Potentially, we don't really get to see past, you know, age 16, 17. But
yeah.
You know, I mean, if I had to guess, I would, if, you know, looking at it through the outer lens, you know, Jenny marrying her, you know, first her, you know, celebrity crush, then her, you know, elementary school crush, her high school crush. And she also sees how much he's been through. So maybe mm-hmm. she was just like, okay, well, your life was, you know, destroyed, basically, and you've gone through more loss than anyone should ever go through. You can have the names. That's my theory. But
yeah, I think you're right, because I think Ginny is too head, particularly book Ginny, is too headstrong to just be like, oh, you're my celebrity crush, you can do whatever you want.
Oh, for sure.
But it's yeah. a very, you're right, it's a very compassionate move for her to be like, all the people you've lost, if you get some sort of closure and mm-hmm. like reconciliation from naming our yeah. children after these people,
yeah,
then you can have that. Actually, I can see that. That sort of does fit her character.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
It sort of transitions us onto one of my unpopular opinions, which
Ooh,
I think
excited.
We kind of agree on.
Okay.
About how I don't really like any of the couplings from the epilogue. Ginny and Harry in particular, Hermione and Ron close behind.
I like Hermione and Ron, I think, more than I like Ginny and Harry. I have
yeah.
nothing against Ginny and Harry. It's just, it felt convenient. You know, it just...
Kind of lazy,
you know? It uh-huh. just kind of felt like this is the convenient thing, you know? Like, my best friend's sister, I'm already a part of the family. Like, you know, they do like each other. They are compatible, but it's probably the choice of convenience so far as yeah. writing goes, you know?
Yeah, and I don't, 100%.
I don't even put that, like, at fault because, you know, I mean, I know as readers, we always want to see characters that we know and love end up together.
Yeah, it does sort of just wrap things up in a pretty little bow at the end. I don't think it's... I guess it opens up too many doors for, like, a single chapter at the end of this, like, really long book. But I just feel like Harry doesn't know who he is as a person. I've talked about this at length on the podcast, so I'll skim through the thought, otherwise people will get very bored. But Harry doesn't know who he is, like, outside of being, first of all, the boy who lived, then being mm-hmm. the chosen one, then being the one that has to kill Voldemort. Like, and by that point, by the time he kills Voldemort, he's already with Ginny. He doesn't know who he is as a person. Outside of this mission to save the Wizarding World from Voldemort, what does Harry want? He wants to be an Auror, we know that much. But besides mm-hmm. that, what are his goals in life? What drives him as a person? And so for him to not have time alone to explore who he is outside the realms of that world, that identity he's sort of like pigeonholed into, it just feels almost sad, almost tragic for him to not be able to explore who he is as a person and just be like, okay, he's killed Voldemort. Now he's with Ginny. They're going to get married, have kids.
Yeah,
and that's it. That's who they are for the rest of their lives. I'd be a bit sad if that were it for him. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's the argument though of like she probably is his comfort place.
You know, like, yeah.
It's almost like we have, you know, we all have comfort people and comfort characters, and like maybe coming back after, you know, the whole journey of searching for Horcruxes and after their breakup and all these things, come back to defeat Voldemort. I mean, he probably did want to just run back to something comfortable. Was that the healthiest choice? I don't know. Like you said, he didn't really ever get to explore and find out who he was. But mm-hmm. I don't even know if he would be at the capacity to like do that in that state of mind, you know?
Mm.
Like if he just kind of went off and was like, okay, I'm going to go find myself now. Like,
I kind of like worry go travel, about go him. Backpacking across Europe.
Yeah. Like, would he have been okay? Like, I mean, maybe.
Yeah. And I guess he can never really get away from that identity. Like, even if he doesn't have to spend his life fighting Voldemort anymore, he's still going to be known as the Chosen One, right?
Yeah. He's still going to be recognized. Muggle world.
Sorry?
He could have gone to the Muggle world, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. That's the other thing. No one marries a Muggle. How does no one marry a Muggle?
I don't know.
I did an episode of the podcast with my friend Dan, and he says that he thinks it would be very in character for Hermione to marry a Muggle, given that she talks at length about how much she thinks Muggle studies is important. She comes from a Muggle background. She goes on to become minister, so an understanding of all these different groups of people. Like, I think it fits. I think the idea of her going back and marrying a Muggle
totally fits
with her character.
For sure. I think the most difficult part about marrying a Muggle that they don't really address that much is just how difficult it would be to keep it from your spouse's family.
Oh, yeah, because the statute of secrecy, mm-hmm. secrecy, you couldn't tell, like, your in-laws about the fact that you're a witch or a wizard.
Yeah, so, like, especially somebody like Hermione, who is so in-depth in the wizarding world in the future, being Minister of Magic.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how that would work, you know? Like, I agree with you that would be, she'd be the most one in character to marry a Muggle, you know?
Yeah, but you're right. If, like, practically, how could, like, she gets a call in the middle of the night because something drastic's happening at the ministry while she's staying with the in-laws, and she just has to pretend nothing's happening.
I know. It feels like there's definitely some flaws in the system with these, the statute of secrecy. Is that what it's called?
I think I just
messed that up. Okay. Yeah.
So many flaws in Harry Potter. That's a whole other podcast.
A whole other thing, yeah.
Yeah. We'll lightning through some more of these. The saddest death in the series was Snape's, comes from Yasmin on Instagram. What do we think?
Dobby.
Dobby is your saddest death?
Dobby is my saddest death.
I think Dobby is very sad, but I don't think he's in leagues with people like Cedric and Fred, and I'll tell you for why.
Fred is my second, yeah.
For me, deaths are the most emotionally pulling when you think about the people they leave behind.
Yeah.
That's why Fred guts me to my core, because it's like, you think about George not having his twin, right? You think about Percy not having spent the last 4 or 5 years with his brother and then fighting alongside him as he dies and never being able to, like, repair that relationship or fill in that missing time. You know that Molly Weasley is going to cry constantly for the rest of her life. And Arthur is going to keep it together to try and comfort her. But the moment he's in a room by himself, he's breaking down. Like,
oh, yeah.
It, like, the thought of that crushes me. And Dobby is very, very sad as a death, don't get me wrong. But besides Harry, he doesn't really leave anyone behind who's going to have that emotional fallout. And so I struggle to find it in the same league as, like, Cedric who leaves people behind and Fred who leaves people behind. Do you know what I mean? And even like Remus and Tonks.
I was going to say Remus and Tonks. I was just thinking about. They both did not need to die, but that's...
No.
But I guess that's kind of the, you know, the tragic like beauty in the writing, you know, like it wasn't a pointless war, but like it, they didn't need to die. You know, they didn't need to die, but they did. And it just... is devastating. So, okay, I think you've won me over to thinking Fred might be the saddest death. I think for me, too, with Dobby, it is just... It is a sadness for Dobby and kind of like representative of all the house elves who kind of die forgotten, you know, and are metaphorically buried on a beach, you know, and like just how beautiful the scene is when Harry like digs it by hand and doesn't use magic. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just such an admittance of like... how flawed the whole magical system is for magical creatures who aren't wizards. And so for me, it's like just looking at Dobby's death is just very symbolic of like, is this the first time a wizard has cared about a house elf's death like this? Is this the first time? And
no,
it's just...
That's true, actually. I've never thought about it like that.
Breaks my heart. I will say, though, like, in the books, I always cry harder at Fred's death because we actually get Fred's death in the books. But mm-hmm. in the movies, we don't really get Fred's death. We get Fred is dead. And that is terrible. I hate that we don't get that, you know, scene, even though it would have been so devastating. But Dobby's death visually, I guess, is the saddest for me. I always cry in the movies at that point.
In the movies, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah. Also, I guess, like, a lot of people find Hedwig's death really sad, which I kind of get. Like, there's the whole vulnerability of the character, right, that makes it quite crushing. Anyway, on to less somber topics. Yeah.
my gosh.
What have we got? Book Harry is a git. Well worded. What do we think?
I'm sorry. We don't really use the word git. Can you give me a definition? I only know it from Harry Potter.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I assume
that's so
I get
funny.
It from context, but I don't want to miss, you know.
Yeah, like a git is just like a bit of an idiot, like
okay.
bit of a tit, like not. It's not as hard as like, if you were to really curse him out,
mm-hmm.
it's just like a bit of an idiot.
Okay. I'd say emotionally, maybe sometimes, yes. Like in the whole, like his, the whole fifth book where he's dating Cho, he's a git, as you would say.
He's a git,
he's
absolutely.
Just so like emotionally oblivious to everything this poor girl is going through. Mm-hmm. And like after they kiss and he was like, she's like, how was it? Wet. She was crying. And it's like, yeah, of course she was crying. Her last boyfriend died and she was already feeling guilty for liking you. Like, overall, I would say no, Harry's not a git. Maybe just with like emotional things.
Yeah, I think he has moments of gitness, if that's a word. Like, you're absolutely right about him being totally like emotionally obtuse with Cho. Like being annoyed that she wants to talk about Cedric with the only person who can give her any form of closure around it. Like, mm-hmm. I get that maybe he doesn't want to talk about it, but he could have been more emotionally aware with and sort of like a bit more sensitive with how he talked to her about it. And just the Order of the Phoenix, it just does my head in. One, that he doesn't listen to Hermione when she says these visions of Sirius are probably Voldemort playing a trick on you. And then when he doesn't open Sirius's gift for communication to check that he's not being held hostage with the mirror. And then when he, I think we talked about this earlier on, like when he is stood in front of the prophecies and the Death Eaters need him to pick it up because he's the only one who can because it's about him.
Ugh.
And all of his friends are like, don't touch that, Harry. And he's like, well, why not? It's about me. And he picks it up. And so a lot of fighting ensues. Like, he's a git in The Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny, too. In my first read through as a kid, The Order of the Phoenix was by far my favorite.
Really?
Like, by far, like, worlds and mounts. And now I actually think that The Half-Blood Prince is my favorite. But it's so funny how much,
good
like,
call.
When I was, like, a kid, man, Order of the Phoenix, I don't know why I liked it so much.
Man,
I don't know.
Because I liked The Order of the Phoenix. It's the first one I feel like I was sort of old enough to understand the hype and get excited for it to come out. And I remember there was loads of press about the fact that JK had killed a very prominent character by the end of it. I remember there was a specific like soundbite where she says something like, a tear trickled down my cheek as I wrote that they died. And no one knew who it was until obviously the book came out. But like that hype, it's the first time I remember being that excited about a book. So I get that. But the pacing is so off with The Order of the Phoenix. That's what gets me. Like, it's my least favorite after The Chamber of Secrets. Just because when it's good, it's amazing. But there are so many bits where I'm just like, come on.
Yeah, Chamber of Secrets is my least favorite too, but I think that's a very popular opinion.
Yeah, that's not unpopular at all.
I have an unpopular opinion, I think, about Order of the Phoenix in general and like characters.
Oh, yes,
maybe unpopular. I don't know. I'm curious to see what you think about this. I love Sirius as a character, but I don't think Sirius is like a good influence on Harry. Like,
oh my God, I agree completely.
Okay, and you do
I've
agree.
Always felt, but I think it is unpopular. I've always felt like I'm in the minority for it.
Mm-hmm, same. Every time I say like I don't really like Sirius, it's not that I don't like the character or that I don't feel for him. It's just that like he's such a bad influence. And like when I'm watching like poor Molly Weasley try to like mother Harry and then Sirius is like egging him on, it's just, it kills me. I'm just like, no, like listen to Molly.
Yeah, Sirius just wants to live the life he never got with James, with Harry. Yeah. Right? He's trying to get him to plug a gap. And I think Sirius is obviously a good person. His heart's in the right place. He always wants to do the right thing. But like, the Order of the Phoenix bothers me because, and I've got a bit more sympathy for him after the whole pandemic thing, but Sirius has to stay in Grimmauld Place.
Yeah.
And he's just like itching to get out and doing whatever he can to get out. And it's kind of like, irresponsible, and
extremely,
it's like there are bigger things at play here, mate. Like it's not just your dad telling you you're grounded and you have to stay at home, right? There's a war going on. You're a wanted criminal. Like, just do what you're damn told. Do you know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, 1,000% agree. And it always bothers me when people are like, we had to get out. Like he had to, like, you know, it's like, no, he didn't. He literally put everyone at risk.
Yeah.
Even like him being spotted by Lucius at like the train stop. Like, isn't that part of how they've discovered that he was, you know, working with them? I'm like trying to put all the pieces back together in my brain. But yeah, it's, okay, I'm glad we agree on that.
Yeah, we agree on that. Although I feel like the majority of people listening will probably not. So, Holly, do you want to drop your at so people know where to throw hate at you so I don't have to take it all?
Yes, of course. Please come leave some, you know, comments about how amazing you think Sirius was for Harry. My at is Hollyauna, HollyAuna on every platform.
Amazing. Before we wrap up, Holly, I do have a couple of quick fire questions. I can't remember the ones I asked you last time.
I don't either, so that's okay.
Okay, but I've got some more. Okay,
okay.
So, you can take Liquid Luck and it'll last for an hour. Excluding obvious things like play the lottery, what are you going to do in that hour where you have like infinite good luck?
So I'm a very clumsy person in general. Like I'm just not a very coordinated person, but I love ice skating and I love rollerblading. And like, I love the idea of being able to surf or do anything that's actually like more athletic than I am prone to do. I think I would want to go like rollerblade somewhere really cool. I know that might sound so lame, but as you know, as Slughorn says, you know, the perfect normal day, you know, creating one, you know, taking an average day and making it just perfect.
Yeah.
I think if I had liquid luck, like I think I would want to use it to, you know, feel like I can safely rollerblade like in downtown Nashville without like worrying, you know.
I love that. That's such a nice, wholesome, that's such a Hufflepuff answer. I love it. And it reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen the movie starring Domhnall Gleeson, who plays Bill Weasley, called About Time with Rachel McAdams as well.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you have to watch it. It's a top three movie for me of all time. It's a rom-com, but it's so wholesome and heartfelt. And the idea is, and it's not spoilers because you find out in the first like 10 minutes, this family that Domhnall Gleeson is a part of, all the males in that family on their 21st birthday learn that they can go back in time.
That's
but
so
it's
cool.
instead of it being like a sci-fi like blockbuster or whatever, he just uses that power to try and find love and make the people in his life just happy. It's such a beautiful movie, and the whole ethos of it is just try and live each day to the best of your ability, like appreciate the little things in it. And I feel like that's exactly the ethos of your liquid luck.
Yeah, thought. I love that so much. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh,
just
please watch it.
Oh, I will watch it. It's on my list now. Thank you.
Amazing. No worries. One other question. Imagine you could enchant something within arm's reach of you right now to be magical. What are you picking and what magical trait are you giving it?
This is too perfect. I apologize to everyone just listening that you can't see how terrifying this is. So I crochet little monsters.
I love that.
What I'm holding right now is supposed to be a teddy bear, but it's just kind of terrifying. And it's like this weird hot pink with like a big purple heart on it. And it just looks like it's going to come haunt your nightmares in the cute way.
It does look like a horror movie version of that teddy bear from Toy Story 3.
Yeah. Like something from like Five Nights at Freddy's or like, I don't even know. Like it is just a little scary. It wasn't supposed to be, but I call it Scare Bear. And it would be so much fun to have Scare Bear have like a personality and be able to like get up and like walk around. I mean, it would just terrify people, but like in a cute way.
That would be so funny. Oh my gosh, I'd love that.
Not useful, but you know, it'd be fun.
If that was in the background of your video right now while we were doing this podcast and it just got up and started walking, right? I would brick it. I would be so frightened. It'd be hilarious.
Wait, oh, what great answer. What does brick it mean?
Brick it is a polite way of saying shit a brick. Like absolutely poop myself. Like be terrified.
Oh, the more you know.
There you go. Okay, what a note to end the podcast on. Holly, thank you so much for coming back. It's always an absolute pleasure. Please come back again soon.
I would love to.
Anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Just come say hi anywhere on socials. Just once again, at Hollyanna, and H-O-L-L-Y-A-U-N-A. Just, yeah, come say hi and say that you found me here, and I'm excited to meet y'all.